You're listening to the NetMums podcast with me, Wendy Gollidge.
And me, Alison Perry. Coming up on this week's show...
If you make a decision to buy something today that you want, but you don't really want, it might stop you buying a thing in the future that you really, really want.
But before all of that...
This episode of the NetMums podcast is brought to you by Aldi. Wendy, I've got a question for you. What's your guilty parenting pleasure?
Oh, I'd probably say it's gobbling up cold fish fingers from my kids' plates after they've abandoned dinner in favour of watching the telly.
I do that too. I reckon my guilty pleasure is sneaking out and escaping my children to have a lovely browse of my local Aldi alone.
I am so with you. What I love about Aldi is they have an excellent range of great value products. They even have an award-winning baby and toddler range, which includes weaning essentials, nappies and wipes.
It's funny you should say that because another friend told me that she switched to Aldi Mamiya and it's giving her big savings.
Yes, plus with NetMums and Aldi, new parents can get a pack of newborn nappies absolutely free. So log on to our site and let your friends know about this awesome opportunity with NetMums and Aldi.
Right, don't tell my family, but I'm sneaking off to Aldi right now.
Hello everybody, welcome to another episode. I want to start today by talking about the black hole of parenting. That is, the underneath of my sofa. I pulled the sofa out yesterday because my darling youngest daughter spilt a whole glass of water, and so I had to mop it up. And oh my God, the crap that I found under that sofa. It was almost prehistoric. And yeah, tell me that I'm not the only one that could basically start a museum exhibit from what's under my sofa.
Underneath my sofa is a bit like a branch of Toys R Us. Honestly, my kid, I've got a little Peppa Pig here that I stood on when it kind of appeared from under my sofa earlier. Honestly, it's shameful. I need to get like a big stick and just get everything from underneath there.
Having done it, don't do it. It's disgusting. Just get head in the sand. You don't want to know. Okay. Let's talk to the guest. I bet there's not crap under her sofa.
I would hazard a guess, especially looking at the beautiful room that she's in right now. I would hazard a guess that there's nothing under her sofa. Now, when I describe today's guest as a dragon, I promise I'm not being rude. Deborah Meading has been an investor on Dragon's Den for so many years, making many entrepreneurs' dreams come true whilst shattering the dreams of others with a swift dose of honesty. Deborah has now written a children's book which aims to teach kids about money from an early age. So we thought she'd be the perfect person to invite on to grill about all things money. Welcome to the podcast, Deborah.
Well, thank you for inviting me.
You're very welcome. It's lovely to have you.
You're wrong. I've got cats that take things and hide things, and I know they're under my sofa.
Oh, Christ, if it's cats, it's probably mouse carcasses.
Well, there were probably lots of stuff mixed in with my... Anyway, let's not go there.
I love that you can blame your cats and we can blame our children. It's done nothing to do with us three.
Never.
I know, it's brilliant, isn't it?
So what's it like, Deborah? You have got the power to make or break people on Dragon's Den. Is that how you see it?
No, not at all. And it isn't people that you're making or breaking. It's businesses that you're taking decisions on. So it certainly isn't a power play. The reason I do Dragon's Den is I love entrepreneurs. I love creativity. I love people who put themselves out there and take risks. So I am really looking for opportunity. When you see me get a little bit testy, shall we say, it's mainly because I get really frustrated for them. I'm like, you've got an amazing opportunity here, guys. You know, please, please don't mess it up. So that's when I get, and also, you know, some of those pitches, they last up to 3.5 hours. So, you know, we don't go from naught to, you know,
wow,
a bit testy like that. It sometimes just takes, you know, a long time with people just not answering questions, avoiding the issues. Trying to pull the wool over our eyes, and there's nothing like that that winds me up.
You've got to be mad to try and pull the wool over you lot. Like, of all the people, just say it straight, right? There's no point. You've seen it all before, surely.
Yeah, and I don't mind that people don't know the answers. I don't mind if they're... Well, numbers I get a little bit because we only ask for very basic numbers. And actually, if you run a business, you do need to fundamentally understand the levers of your business. You know, you've got to know what your turnover is. You've got to know what your margins are. You've got to know that actually you're selling something at a profit. So that's not hard. You know, that's like the lifeblood of a business. So we're not asking particularly difficult questions. And if people can't answer those, that worries me. That really does worry me. But you know, sometimes I'll ask a question and I feel like saying, you just don't know the answer, do you? So just say it. Just say, I don't know. I'll find out. You know, I would admire you, respect you, trust you more if you told the truth.
Now, you've invested in so many amazing things. My favorite is the Solar Buddies, the kids' sun cream applicator. It's just so good. Which is the investment that you're currently most excited about?
Well, I find that a really difficult question to answer because I'm a love the one I'm with girl. You know, because I've currently got 29 live investments, so I can't carry them all around with me in my head all of the time. So when I'm actually dealing with a particular business, there is no other business in my life. You know, that's all I'm interested in. And also they're all really different stages because some of them, you know, Solar Buddies is a very recent investment. Some, you know, I've still got the first investment I ever made on Dragon's Den. So they're all at very, very different stages. So I can't tell you there's one that excites me more than another. I do love Solar Buddies. I think it's absolutely brilliant. And it is one of those businesses that came into the den and I just thought, why hasn't anybody else thought of, you know, doesn't that exist?
Well, I always said they needed to invent sun cream sheep dip for children. So you could just go plonk, plonk and they'd be done.
Are you allowed to do that? I'm not sure you're allowed to do that. I mean, I don't have children.
I'm not sure.
I've got sheep, but I'm not sure you're allowed to do that.
Is there one that got away, as it were, someone who you really wanted to invest in, but they went to another dragon?
So there's a lot. But again, I'm not a regret kind of person either. There's no point. I did my absolute best. If I really want something, I try really, really hard for it. If it doesn't happen, then it's probably not happened for a good reason. It's happened. The chemistry won't be right, you know, or maybe the deal wasn't good enough for them, but it was the deal that I was prepared to offer on. So I always put my best foot forward. And of course, there's a moment where I think, oh, damn, I really would have liked that one. But there's plenty more opportunities. And I do this in life. There's no point looking back and thinking, oh, I wish. You know, what's the point of that? It didn't happen. So it's much better for me to use my energy saying that is a shame. I would have loved to be involved with that business. And I genuinely think sometimes that was a mistake because I know the qualities of the dragons. Sometimes I completely admit there's another dragon that would be a better dragon for you. You know, I get that. But sometimes I see them choose a dragon. I think, I know I would have been the right one for you. That's the only time it gets disappointing. But, you know, once it happens, it's happened.
That's tough. Now, your new book, Why Money Matters, is all about teaching kids about money, all aspects of money. What was your childhood like in terms of money? What age were you when you learned the value of money? Did you have a part-time job, for example, in order to save up for something you wanted?
When I was 18 months old, my mother divorced my father. She was a single parent mother. She had to work, you know, with no money at all. There was no support coming her way. So she had to go out and work and we went to live with a family while she did that. So money, I think, became present in my life because there was a lot of conversation from very early days of, well, we can't afford to do that. Or, you know, so I learned very quickly the language of need versus want, you know, what you can afford, having to save up for things. I understood all of those things. Of course, I didn't understand the more complicated stuff. So it was ever present. I don't remember a time when I didn't really understand what money was, but I knew it was really important. And I knew that it helped us do things that we needed or wanted to do. But the book really was about, so you see, by the time we're seven, we've started forming our money ideas.
Well, I was about to ask, it's aimed at 6 to 9 year olds, but is that the age then where we should be talking to our kids about money?
You start forming your habits really quite young. Now, you know, this isn't, do you understand compound interest? But it's, you know, it was inbuilt into us. A lot of adults don't.
No.
That's my next book. but it was inbuilt into, you know, it just through living through it, it was inbuilt into us, the value of money. But if you don't necessarily have that, you know, the wants versus the needs and all that, it's very difficult to learn it. So I just felt we to give people the best, to give adults the best, you know, those future adults the best chance in life. You know, let's give them a really good basic understanding of what it's all about. We do. I mean, I touch on things like I do compound interest. I did interest, and then the publishers came back and said, "Can you do compound interest?" And I literally said, honestly, most adults haven't got a clue how compound interest works. I will do it as long as I can use jelly beans, which I do.
It's a way forward in life. If in doubt, use jelly beans.
But also, you know, it talks about tax and earnings I learned a lot when I was writing the book. You know, it's interesting. Money can be a really, it can sound like a dry topic. But the history of money, why is paper worth anything? What's all that about? You know, when was the first coins? What's the history of money? You know, what can it help me do? You know, and it also deals with sometimes not everything is about, well, a lot of times not everything's about money. So I hope it deals with it in the round. It just gives children a good grounding.
Yeah, it's great. And, you know, it really actually got me thinking about the fact that we as adults rarely use actual cash these days. So much is about, you know, ordering something on the internet and then it appears, you know, the next day or a few days later. You know, do you think that affects how children are learning about money?
I think it does, because it's very easy to understand. I have money in my hand. When I buy something, some of that money goes. So it's a very clear, you know, if it's physical cash, it's very easy to understand the cost of things. It's much more difficult when it's invisible money. And I absolutely deal with that. And things like transfers and credit cards and debit cards, and explain that actually all money really is a record of numbers. That's all money. You know, it's a belief system and it's a record of numbers. If you spend money on your credit card, the numbers in your bank account go down. If you save money, the numbers in your bank account, it's not actual money being delivered somewhere. You know, it's just numbers going up and down. So it deals with all of those things, because you're so right. You would learn money very differently today as you would even 10 years ago. You know, we've switched. I don't remember the last time I actually physically paid for something in cash.
So how do we address that, though? Because I've got an 11-year-old and a 7-year-old, and they've got their own little card, and we put money on their card once a week for their pocket money, and they can see what they've got and go to the shop and buy crap from the toy shop, let's be honest. But it's my 7-year-old especially, that transaction is, she can't, exactly like you said, if I gave her £2 and said, you have £2 and the chocolate bar in the sweet shop is £2, it's gone. How do we get that across when it's in the ether?
Well, I explain, I talk about things like, and we start off with needs and wants. So first of all, cover your needs. And then I talk about wants. And I talk about things like, if you make a decision to buy something today that you want, but you don't really want, it might stop you buying a thing in the future that you really, really want. So take a moment to think long and hard about the value of that to you, and don't just buy it because you've got the cash available. Think, you know, it might be a games console that I want in the future. So I think it's just making sure that you link the thing that they really want to getting to understand, do you really want it? Or is it just that you've got your money on your card, so I am going to go down the shop and spend it?
I think I need to learn from this. I don't know about myself.
It's so hard though, isn't it? Because like my 12-year-old, if she has money, it's like it's burning a hole in her pocket. She just needs to spend it, and she'll have, you know, £10 in her bank account. And she's like, oh, I want to go into town. And I'm like, well, to buy what? And she's like, oh, I don't know. I just want to spend my pocket money. And it's like, no, save up for something that you actually want.
But I think having those conversations about, you know, what would you love? What would you really, really want? You know, I think having those conversations, putting a value on that. And I've got sort of challenges in the book that says, you know, work out something that you dream of having. How much would it cost? Pony. It doesn't matter if it's a horse. You know, for me, it was a pony. You know, imagine that thing that you really, really want. And then think about how much pocket money that would take, if it's pocket money, or ask your friends and family how much they pay you to wash the car, and try to work out how long it will take you to actually buy the thing that you really, really want. And it just starts getting them thinking about, oh, I get it. I see. You know, it's not just going to keep automatically turning up, you know, and there's no point me spending it, because one day I just know I'm going to want that thing. I mean, we all know we do, don't we? Always. I've always said, I don't care how old you are, I always have something in my life I really, really want and I can't afford.
What's the thing right now, Deborah, that you really want but can't afford? Will you tell us? Will you share it with us?
It's whether I could afford it or not, but I would love a Toulouse-Lautrec original piece of art, because I just love his art. So that's rarity as well. You know, they don't come up very often. So that's kind of the thing that I think, oh gosh, if that came up, I would really, really love it. I think it's also good for the soul to know that you can't buy everything.
I agree. Do you think it's important that we buy preschool children things like toy cash registers? Oh, can't say the word. Toy cash registers or shops to help get that message across, you know, the imaginary play around money.
I think imaginary play around money is good as long as it is related to money, you know, as long as, listen, it can just be a game. It doesn't matter. You know, if it's just kids should play, that's fine. But if you're using it as a tool, then there is a big difference between playing an imaginary game and actually learning about cash. I think you've got to know what you're doing with this. Am I buying it because I want them to learn, you know, to understand the value of money? Because I don't think the play in itself necessarily connects to everyday life. I'm not sure.
Something that I'm quite a big fan of, but I think a lot of parents are quite divided over them, are these sort of cards and apps that you can get these days for kids. Like there's one called Go Henry, and it kind of gives kids the ability to load money onto a card, and they can spend it in shops, and they can see on the app how much, you know, how much money they've got and how much they're saving up. Is that a good thing in your eyes, or is it kind of like unnecessary tech that's kind of complicating things a bit?
No, I think it's a very good thing because you know, their lives in the future are going to be completely about that. You know, so there's no point me writing a book for children and not dealing with those things, because that, you know, coins and paper money are very quickly going to, you know, in their lifetime, going to disappear. So, no, I think that's really important. What I do think is important is they understand where the money comes from. And again, I think it's very helpful if they never have quite enough money. You know, it's very helpful if they just slightly need a little bit more, because then they learn the whole saving piece. I don't think it's helpful if money just appears on their card and they could just go out and spend it, and then that, you know, there's no real learning of the value of money.
Coming on to that, not having quite enough money, with the cost of living crisis at the moment, how do you suggest parents who are struggling with money talk to their children about the problems? I guess, how can you be honest without scaring them and tell them the realities without frightening them?
Well, I think there's two things that are really important. One is that they talk about it as a temporary situation. So it's happening to us at the moment, but there's life beyond that, because I think it's very worrying, not just for children, for adults, if they think that this is it, it's just going to get worse, you know. So I think it's an understanding of why we're in a cost of living crisis. You don't have to, you know, talk about bombs and the Ukraine war, just say that sometimes in life things happen that mean that it gets much more expensive to buy things. It's always temporary, because it is always temporary. Now, whether that's temporary is a year, or I don't know how long that is, but it's always temporary. So I think you need to talk about it in a temporary way. But actually, I should have started with this first. The most important thing is to talk about it and explain what it means. Because if you just talk about a cost of living crisis, I don't think most children would actually understand what does that mean. All I know is you're worried. You've got a worried look on your face when you say that. So I think if you can explain that, and that's going to mean that we're not going to be able to buy everything that we wanted to buy. You know, it might affect you. It might be a good moment to say, so actually there's going to be a little bit less in your pocket money. You can help us. You can contribute to helping the family, so they don't feel helpless. They feel part of what's going on, and explain what cost of living means. What does that mean to a child? you know, you've just explained it. And you know, I'm a great believer in, you know, children will make up their own version of what's going on if you don't explain to them actually what's going on. And using adult language, we all use cost of living crisis. There's a lot of, that means a lot of things. So I think you just need to be clear about it. It's funny, isn't it? Because I don't even have children. Here I am talking.
It's all very sensible. It's much more sensible than my advice.
Do you have any tips, Deborah, on teaching kids the value of money? So, you know, where do you stand on kids earning money through doing chores versus being given pocket money?
I think they both have their place. I think pocket money is important because you can actually introduce that a little bit earlier. And it also teaches them what, you know, it's that thing we were talking about earlier. If they want something that's too expensive, they learn that really quickly, that, oh, that's what money does. I do think earning is also very important to learn early on. But I think sometimes I see people overpay children.
Could someone overpay me, please?
But and I've had it here, actually. I'd have friends, I'd have children, you know, I say children, you know, sort of 13 or 14 come over, help out with the horses. And you think, oh, what should I pay them? And I think, well, actually, it's not that I'm being mean, but I shouldn't pay them the going rate for an adult. You know, they need to understand that there are rates of pay. I think they certainly both play their parts, pocket money and earning. And I also think it's also important they understand that sometimes it's just nice to do things to be kind. Otherwise, money can just become all important. You know, everything's about, I'm not doing that unless I get paid. So I think that, and again, in the book, I talk about, because you need to be careful in a book about money, that it doesn't become just so important that that's all that matters. So I do, and I talk about, it is actually nice just to be kind to people. And sometimes you might want to use your money to buy somebody else something else to be kind. You know, it isn't all about you.
I was going to ask you about, well, it's interesting to me that my 11-year-old has already fathomed very quickly there's something that she wanted. She wanted a Polaroid camera and she didn't have enough money. And first of all, she fathomed that if she found one on eBay, she was closer to having enough money. So she bought it secondhand. And then she fathomed that she's very lucky to have lots of aunties and uncles who give her birthday money. So she bargained with her dad and I that she could preemptively spend her birthday money and pay us back in September. So we agreed to that because we thought it was quite enterprising of her, in fairness. What do you make of that? Have I totally failed at the parenting money lesson here?
I don't think you have. So the lesson she's learned, I love that she's buying, that she found eBay and that she's buying, she's not demanding new. She's found something that is recycled. That's great in terms of sustainability and all of those measures. And that's going to be stronger going forward. I love that she's thought this through and come to you with a proposition. And really, you've taught her the value of loans. You know, you're lending her the money. So she now knows what she's going to feel when she gets to her birthday. As long as you stick to it, is great. What she's going to feel is slightly disappointed on her birthday because she's already had her present. So that's a lesson in itself. As long as you stick to it, I do see parents who do that and then they think, oh, it's her birthday. We'll get her something else, you know, and that I don't think that's not helpful because that teaches you actually, do you know what? I'll have that, you know, I'll borrow the money and everything will be fine in the end. So I think it's going to be a really valuable lesson for her. She will feel mildly disappointed on her birthday. That is a good lesson.
I'm not going to let my 12-year-old listen to this because I've just had a blazing row with her because she wanted me to do a similar thing where she was like, well, can you give me next month's pocket money early so I can go and buy myself a pair of Nike shorts? And I was like, no. So I encouraged her to go to her bedroom and look around to see if there's anything that she could sell. And she came across her old sewing machine that she doesn't use anymore. And so we're trying to sell that for her on like Facebook Marketplace or eBay. But she thinks I'm the meanest mum in the world because I wouldn't do what Wendy just describes.
Both of what you're doing have got money lessons in them. So it's not that one is right and one is wrong. So your lessons are before you go and borrow money forward, which is a dangerous thing unless you definitely know you're going to get it. Pocket money, that she is probably going to get the pocket money. going forward. So that's probably not dangerous for her now, but it will be going in the future. And she's also now learned the value. Look, if you want the money and you want it up front, you're going to have to do something for it. Let's see what you're going to. And I talk about that in the book. I say perhaps, you know, you might have things that you can sell if you need the money. So I don't think it's, you know, it's not one or the other. I think all you're doing and you know, you're up. And I think both of you have done really good things there because you've thought about what you're doing and the effect on your children. But if you're just going to hand cash out, you know, and then, you know, give in and then say, oh, I will get them something else as well, that's probably not such a good message.
Do you ever find yourself going against your better judgment in the den because you like somebody?
Oh, well, you see, I don't think that is against my better judgment. You can't, everybody has instant responses to people, you know, oh, I like that type of person. I don't get to know the person in the den, but I like that type of person or I don't. But the person that you invest in is a very big part of an investment. So for me, the chemistry has to be right. Now, I don't have to think they're going to be my friend. I do have to trust them. And I ask all of my questions about the business, but there's, and I call it a row of switch, kind of see this row of switches, right? I need to know A, B, C, D about the business. The last switch is how do I feel about this business? And that is as much about how do I feel about this person? Because if I don't trust them, life is too short. I don't need to invest in anybody. You know, I do it because I enjoy it. I love startups. I love creativity. I love seeing businesses go from tiny businesses to big businesses or whatever size businesses that person wants to be. That is fantastic. But I'm not going to get involved with somebody I don't trust that I keep looking over my shoulder. I have to think, are they telling me everything? Am I having the truth here? So if that switch doesn't go down, then I absolutely won't invest. I don't care how good the business is. I'm not interested. So the chemistry, it's not like or not like. It's more about, can I work with this person, this type of person? You know, do I believe them? Do I trust them? Because that really, although we're in there for, you know, max, I think the longest I've done is 3.5. The shortest we've done is 11 minutes. So that was quite short. But you can't really get to know a person then, but you can get to see how they do business.
Great. Now, if parents do just one thing after listening to this episode, Deborah, what should it be?
Go and pre-order Why Money Matters, obviously.
Good answer.
Touché.
not to miss an opportunity.
And that right there, ladies and gentlemen, is why Deborah's office looks like it does and mine looks like it does.
That's it. Don't look for another thing. That's all they need to do.
Deborah, I've got to ask, have you got a bit of a black eye there? Is everything okay?
No, I have. We've just had two rescue pups have just come over from Hungary, and they're Aww. A little bit full of it. I know they're lovely, but I have got scratches and over exuberant puppy bruises all over me. It just caught me under the eye. So a little bit sore, but I thought I covered it, but obviously not well enough.
Just got to check that one of our dragons isn't being beaten up quietly.
Well, I am, but my puppies.
So do you have a lot of animals? Because you mentioned that you've got sheep and horses.
I have. We have a small holding. It's not huge, but it's about 26 acres. And we have, you know, we've got space. They're all rescue or rehomed animals. So, you know, sheep that were going to slaughter or X-ray horses at the end of their life. And I mean, I love animals. And for me, it's a complete pleasure. And I feel very lucky to be able to have them around me. You know, I've got space and we've got fields. And they, you know, they certainly add to my life. But I am generally at some point, you know, I've either got an ill animal or bruises all over me. Or, you know, I do feel I have to explain myself sometimes before my poor old husband gets a reputation.
Do you have a favourite animal? Are you is that like saying, do you have, you know, is it hard to say which is the favorite?
Yeah, I couldn't say. I have always had cats and cats and horses. I think it, when I was tiny, I used to hang around the horses so I could do help out with the pony rides on Minehead Seafront. So I Aww. Horses I absolutely love, and I ride most. I've been riding today. nobody can see, but I've got a riding hat here. but I'm a better person when I ride. You know, I'm better at my job. It keeps me very grounded. Animals don't care who you are, what you're doing, what's going on in your life. They need looking after. And if you're riding, you can't think about anything else but riding. So, you know, I am a better person. I feel very lucky that I can have animals around, and not just animals. You know, where we are, we've got some wonderful wildlife and birds and sometimes, you know, everybody gets this in their life and nobody has it all. And I get moments where I think, oh, I've got so much going, my head is going to explode. And just standing out and listening to the birds and seeing the little grasslings creep through the grass, you know, it's a very grounding and relaxing thing. So I feel very lucky to be able to do it.
A little birdie told me you're doing something around David Attenborough, and tell us about what you're up to with these films that you're in, Deborah.
So I feel very, very honoured to have been asked to be part of I don't know if you remember the Wild Isles films, which were all about our wonderful British nature. You know, we always look at lions in Africa and panthers and, you know, and we never look at our own. And I think it's the first time we've treated our own nature, British nature, with the same respect. So I just absolutely love the series. But I was really honoured to be asked to take part using some of the footage or made by the same company at the same time. And some of that footage has been put together to present to businesses to talk about how business can positively impact upon nature. And it's a fantastic thing. And what I'm doing basically is saying to people, look, there are these films that are available to you. Show them to your colleagues, show them to your businesses, you know, and make a promise to help nature in some way, because, you know, it needs a little bit of help at the moment. So it's for me, it was just a wonderful thing to be part of. And hopefully, you know, it's going to draw attention in a really positive way to our fabulous wildlife.
Well, thank you so much for joining us, Deborah. It's been a pleasure to have you on the podcast.
It's been great. Thank you so much.
No, well, thank you very much for inviting me. I've had fun.